The Noble Spirit of David. This chapter is based on 1 Samuel 22, verse 20 to 23, 23 to 27. One of the sons of Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub, named Abiathar, escaped and fled after David. And Abiathar told David that Saul had killed the Lord's priests. So David said to Abiathar, "I knew that day, when Doeg the Edomite was there, that he would surely tell Saul. I have caused the death of all the persons of your father's house. Stay with me, do not fear. For he who seeks my life seeks your life, but with me you shall be safe." Still hunted by the king, David's brave group retreated to the wilderness of Ziph. At this time, when there were so few bright spots in the path of David, he received an unexpected visit from Jonathan. These two friends told each other about their many experiences, and Jonathan cheered the heart of David, saying, "Do not fear, for the hand of Saul my father shall not find you. You shall be king over Israel, and I shall be next to you. Even my father Saul knows that." The hunted fugitive was greatly encouraged. So the two of them made a covenant before the Lord. And David stayed in the woods, and Jonathan went to his own house. The Ziphites sent word to Saul in Gibeah that they knew where David was hiding and that they would guide the king to his retreat. But David, warned of their intentions, changed his location, seeking safety in the mountains between Maon and the Dead Sea. Again, a message came to Saul. "Take note, David is in the wilderness of En-Gedi." Then Saul took 3,000 chosen men from all Israel and went to seek David and his men on the rocks of the wild goats. David had only 600 men in his company. The son of Jesse waited in a secluded cave for God's guidance about what to do. As Saul was making his way up the mountains, he entered alone the very cave in which David and his people were hiding. When David's men saw this, they urged their leader to kill Saul. The king was now in their power, certain evidence that God himself had delivered the enemy into their hand so that they could destroy him. David was tempted to take this view of the situation, but the voice of conscience spoke to him. "Touch not the anointed of the Lord." David's men reminded their commander of the words of God. "Behold, I will deliver your enemy into your hand, that you may do to him as it seems good to you." And David arose and secretly cut off a corner of Saul's robe. Saul got up and went out of the cave to continue his search, when a voice came to his startled ears. "My lord, the king!" Who was speaking to him? The son of Jesse, the man he had so long wanted to kill. David bowed, then said to Saul, "Look, this day your eyes have seen that the Lord delivered you today into my hand in the cave, and someone urged me to kill you. But my eye spared you, and I said, 'I will not stretch out my hand against my Lord, for he is the Lord's anointed.' Moreover, my father, see. Yes, see the corner of your robe in my hand. For in that I cut off the corner of your robe and did not kill you, know and see that there is neither evil nor rebellion in my hand, and I have not sinned against you. Yet you hunt my life to take it." Saul was deeply moved as he realized how completely he had been in the power of the man whom he was trying to kill. With softened spirit, he exclaimed, "Is this your voice, my son David?" And Saul lifted up his voice and wept. Then he declared to David, "You are more righteous than I, for you have rewarded me with good, whereas I have rewarded you with evil. For if a man finds his enemy, will he let him get away safely? Therefore, may the Lord reward you with good for what you have done to me this day. And now I know indeed that you shall surely be king, and that the kingdom of Israel shall be established in your hand. And David made a commitment to Saul that he would not cut off his descendants. David could not rely on the king's promises, so when Saul returned home, he stayed in the mountains. After evil-minded men say and do wicked things against the Lord's servants, the Spirit of the Lord works with them, and sometimes they humble their hearts in front of those they have tried to destroy. But as they again open the door to the evil one, the old hatred rekindles, and they return to the same actions that they repented of. Satan can use such souls with far greater power than before, because they have sinned against greater light. The people are sorry. They asked for a king. Then Samuel died, and the Israelites gathered together and lamented for him, and buried him in his home at Ramah. A great and good prophet and an outstanding judge had died. Ever since he was very young, Samuel had lived his life in the sight of all Israel with the integrity of his heart. Although Saul had been king, Samuel had wielded a more powerful influence than he, because his record was one of faithfulness and devotion. The people saw what a mistake they had made in wanting a king, so that they would not be different from the nations around them. Many of them looked with fear at the condition of society, which was quickly becoming corrupted with godlessness. There were good reasons for Israel to mourn that Samuel, the prophet of the Lord, was dead. The nation had lost the one to whom the people had been used to going to with their great troubles. They had lost one who had constantly pled with God for the best interests of the people. His prayers had given them a sense of security, for the effective, fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. James 5, verse 16. The king seemed almost like a madman. Justice was perverted, and order was turned to confusion. The people's thoughts were bitter as they looked on Samuel's quiet resting place and remembered their foolishness in rejecting him as their ruler. He had had so close a connection with heaven that he seemed to hold all Israel together to God's throne. Samuel had taught them to love and obey God, but now he was dead. The people felt that they were left to the mercies of a king who was joined to Satan and who would divorce the people from God and heaven. David knew that Samuel's death had broken another link of control on the actions of Saul, and he felt less secure than when the prophet lived, so he fled to the wilderness of Paran. In these desolate wilds, realizing that the prophet was dead and the king was his enemy, he sang, "He who keeps you will not slumber. Behold, he who keeps Israel shall neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord shall preserve your going out and your coming in from this time forth and even forevermore." Psalm 121, verse 3-8. Nabal, the hard-hearted farmer. David and his men protected the flocks and herds of a wealthy man named Nabal, who had vast resources in Paran. But Nabal's character was ill-tempered and stingy. It was the time of sheep shearing, a season of hospitality. David and his men needed supplies, and the son of Jesse sent 10 young men to Nabal, instructing them to greet him in their master's name. "Peace be to you, peace to your house, and peace to all that you have. Now I have heard that you have shearers. Your shepherds were with us, and we did not hurt them, nor was there anything missing from them all the while they were in Carmel." Not Mount Carmel, but a place in the territory of Judah. "Ask your young men, and they will tell you. Therefore, please give whatever comes to your hand to your servants and to your son David." This rich man was asked to provide from his great wealth some relief to the needs of those who had given him such valuable service. The answer Nabal gave showed his character. "Who is David, and who is the son of Jesse? There are many servants nowadays who break away each one from his master. Shall I then take my bread and my water and my meat that I have killed for my shearers and give it to men when I do not know where they are from?" David was furious. He determined to punish the man who had denied him what was his right and had added insult to injury. This impulsive movement was more like the character of Saul than of David. The son of Jesse still had to learn patience. Nabal's wise wife saves the household. Without asking her husband, Abigail put together a good supply of food, which she sent forward in the care of servants, and started out herself to meet David. When Abigail saw David, she dismounted quickly from the donkey, fell on her face before David, and bowed down to the ground. So she fell at his feet and said, "On me, my lord, on me let this iniquity be. Please let your maidservant speak in your ears." Abigail spoke to David with as much reverence as though she were speaking to a crowned monarch. She tried to soothe his irritated feelings with kind words. Full of God's wisdom and love, she made it plain that the unkind course of her husband was certainly not premeditated, but simply the outburst of an unhappy, selfish nature. She then offered her rich provision as a peace offering to the men of David. She said, "The Lord will certainly make for my Lord an enduring house, because my Lord fights the battles of the Lord, and evil is not found in you throughout your days." Abigail implied that David ought to fight the battles of the Lord. He was not to seek revenge for personal wrongs, even though persecuted as a traitor. "And it shall come to pass, when the Lord has done for my Lord according to all the good that he has spoken concerning you, and has appointed you ruler over Israel, that this will be no grief to you, nor offense of heart to my Lord, either that you have shed blood without cause, or that my Lord has avenged himself."
The Abigail's faith, like the fragrance of a flower, breathed out all unconsciously in her face, words and actions. The Spirit of God was living in her soul. Her speech, seasoned with grace, carried a heavenly influence. David trembled as he thought of his rash intentions. "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God." Matthew 5, verse 9, KJV. May there be many more people like this woman of Israel who would soothe irritated feelings, prevent rash impulses, and stop great evils by words of calm wisdom. David's anger died away under the power of Abigail's influence and reasoning. He was convinced that he had lost control of his own spirit. With humble heart, he received the rebuke in harmony with his own words. "Let the righteous strike me, it shall be a kindness, and let him rebuke me, it shall be as excellent oil." Psalm 141, verse 5. He gave thanks and blessings because she advised him in the right way. How few people listen to reproof with gratitude and bless those who try to save them from following an evil course. Remorse and fear take Nabal's life. When Abigail returned home, she found Nabal and his guests in a drunken celebration. She did not tell her husband what had happened in her meeting with David until the next morning. When he realized how near his foolishness had brought him to sudden death, he seemed to become paralyzed. He was filled with horror and sank down in a helpless daze. After 10 days, he died. In the middle of his celebrations, God had said to him, as to the rich man of the parable, This night your soul will be required of you. Luke 12, verse 20. Later, David married Abigail. He was already the husband of one wife, but the custom of the nations of his time had perverted his judgment. Throughout all of his life, David felt the bitter result of marrying many wives. The Ziphites, hoping to win favor with the king, again told him about David's hiding place. Once more, Saul summoned his men of arms and led them in hunting David. But friendly spies brought word to the son of Jesse, and with a few of his men, David started out to learn the location of his enemy. It was night when they came upon the tents of the king and his attendants and saw, unobserved, the camp quiet in sleep. David asked, "Who will go down with me to Saul in the camp?" Abishai promptly responded, "I will go down with you." Hidden by the shadows of the hills, David and his attendant entered the camp. They came near to Saul, who was sleeping, with his spear stuck in the ground and a jug of water at his head. Beside him lay Abner, his chief commander, and all around them were the soldiers locked in sleep. Abishai raised his spear. "God has delivered your enemy into your hand this day. Now, therefore, please let me strike him at once with the spear, right to the earth, and I will not have to strike him a second time." He waited for permission, but instead he heard the whispered words, "Do not destroy him, for who can stretch out his hand against the Lord's anointed and be guiltless? As the Lord lives, the Lord shall strike him, or he shall go out to battle and perish. The Lord forbid that I should stretch out my hand against the Lord's anointed. But please take now the spear and the jug of water that are by his head, and let us go." And no man saw or knew it or awoke, because a deep sleep from the Lord had fallen on them. When David was a safe distance from the camp, he called with a loud voice to Abner,
"Are you not a man? And who is like you in Israel? Why then have you not guarded your lord the king? For one of the people came in to destroy your lord the king. This thing that you have done is not good. As the Lord lives, you deserve to die, because you have not guarded your master, the Lord's anointed. And now see where the king's spear is, and the jug of water that was by his head." Then Saul knew David's voice and said, "Is that your voice, my son David?" David said, "It is my voice, my lord, O king." And he said, "Why does my lord thus pursue his servant? For what have I done, or what evil is in my hand?" Again, King Saul confesses he is wrong. Again, the king acknowledged, "I have sinned. Return, my son David, for I will harm you no more, because my life was precious in your eyes this day. Indeed, I have played the fool and erred exceedingly." David answered, "Here is the king's spear. Let one of the young men come over and get it." Although Saul had made the promise, "I will harm you no more," David did not place himself in his grasp. Saul exclaimed as they parted, "May you be blessed, my son David. You shall both do great things and also still prevail." But the son of Jesse had no hope that the king would continue thinking this way for very long.
David felt hopeless that there would ever be a reconciliation with Saul. It seemed that he would finally fall victim to the hatred of the king. With the 600 men under his command, he went over to Achish, the king of Gath. David's conclusion that Saul would accomplish his murderous intent was formed without the counsel of God. Even while Saul was plotting his destruction, the Lord was working to obtain the kingdom for David. Looking at appearances, people interpret the trials and tests that God permits as things that will only bring their ruin. David looked on appearances and not at the promises of God. He doubted that he would ever come to the throne. Long trials had worn down his faith and exhausted his patience. The Lord did not send David to the Philistines, the most bitter foes of Israel, for protection. Yet, having lost all confidence in Saul and in those who served him, David threw himself on the mercies of his people's enemies. God had appointed him to set up his kingdom in the land of Judah, and it was lack of faith that led him to run away from his duty. Another of David's mistakes. The Philistines had feared David more than Saul. By placing himself under the protection of the Philistines, David revealed to them the weakness of his own people. Thus, he encouraged these determined enemies to persecute Israel. David had been anointed to stand in defense of the people of God. The Lord does not want his servants to give encouragement to the wicked by exposing the weakness of his people. In addition, the Israelites received the impression that David had gone to the heathen to serve their gods. By this act, many were led to be prejudiced against him. The very thing Satan desired to have him do, he was led to do. David did not renounce his worship of God, nor devotion to his cause, but he sacrificed his trust in him for his personal safety. The king of the Philistines received David cordially. The king admired him and was flattered to have a Hebrew seek his protection. David brought his family, his household, and all his possessions, as his men did also. To all appearances, he had come to settle permanently in the land of Philistia. This flattered Achish, who promised to protect the fugitive Israelites. At David's request, the king graciously granted him Ziklag as a possession. In a town wholly separated for their use, David and his men could worship God with more freedom than in Gath, where heathen rites might become a source of evil. While living in this isolated town, David made war on the Geshurites, the Gerzites, and the Amalekites, and left none alive to bring the report to Gath. He led Achish to believe that he had been warring against his own nation, the men of Judah. By these lies, he strengthened the hand of the Philistines, for the king said, "He has made his people Israel utterly abhor him. Therefore, he will be my servant forever." David was not walking in the counsel of God when he was deceptive. Now it happened in those days that the Philistines gathered their armies together for war to fight with Israel. And Achish said to David, "You assuredly know that you will go out with me to battle, you and your men." David answered the king evasively, "Surely you know what your servant can do." Achish pledged his word to bestow on David a high position at the Philistine court. But although David's faith had somewhat hesitated regarding the promises of God, he still remembered that Samuel had anointed him king of Israel. He reviewed the mercy of God in preserving him from Saul and determined not to betray a sacred trust. Even though the king of Israel had sought his life, he would not join his forces with the enemies of his people.